Welcome back to another episode of Profitable Audience. Today we're going to get psychological. We're going to talk about something that all entrepreneurs experience at some point or another, and that is the trough of sorrow. Tony, what's the trough of sorrow?
So basically, it is that point when you are starting a business. When you start a business, it's pretty exciting. Because you get to like try something new. Usually you get to buy something cool to start your business, like a new laptop or order products from Asia, whatever it is. And then you get started and you set everything up, and then something happens or nothing happens. Usually it's nothing. And reality sets in about the slog, and you kind of go through these feelings of being down. And your business is probably down too, because that's it's all correlated. But basically the trough of sorrow is that period of time where things aren't going how you want them to go. You're feeling probably, I would say, a little bit depressed, and you have to make some decisions in your business, in your life.
I guess my definition is a little different.
Okay, what's yours?
I guess it's similar. It's more like hopelessness. Like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Like, I could be out, you know, hanging out with my friends or whatnot. Instead, I'm doing this thing that's stagnant and it's not moving anywhere.
Yeah, hopelessness. I actually thought of that word and it felt really awful, so I didn't want.
It's realistic though.
It is. That's true. So a couple thoughts on that first. Pretty much every entrepreneur goes through this at some point. I think it's abnormal if you don't. So I think that's the first thing to think about. The second thing is it's very normal to do this. Like I said, everybody goes through it. I think, can you think of a period where you felt that way? I can think of one where I feel like you felt that way.
Oh, I felt like that for both businesses.
You're like, today I'm feeling that way.
So Bumblebee Linens, I'll just give you an example. We spent all this time working on the website, getting the products in, and then we launched it, and then no one bought anything for weeks, actually. Yeah. I mean, I don't really actually consider that the trough of sorrow. I consider that me being too optimistic, right? Because I thought that people would just be able to magically find our site. So I don't consider that the trough of sorrow, actually, come to think of it. The trough of sorrow is once you get those first couple sales and you're excited, and then you realize that might have been like a fluke or something, and then you go through another long period where it's not looking good. And we experienced this a lot that first year, where you're like, hey, maybe this isn't going to work. Maybe I don't know what I'm doing here. There's no light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes. So I guess that is hopelessness if you can't see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
So the other thing I think you need to think about is that the trough of sorrow is actually your opportunity. Because think about this. Let's just say you launched Bumblebee Linens and you sold a couple hankies, and then randomly some very famous wedding planner found you, and you just had booming business for months and months and years, right? And so you'd never experienced sort of a downturn, right? And then maybe like 5 or 6 years down the road, something happens and then you experience a downturn, but you've never had that like growth opportunity. I think if most of the time people hit this within their first like year of building a business, year or two, before they've experienced a lot of success. And so I think it's your opportunity to figure out what in your business is working and what in your business isn't working.
I don't know if Bumblebee Linens is the best example.
No, probably not. But
the blog is a much better example.
Yes.
Sorry, you're going to say something?
Well, I was going to say, if you think about it in terms of like startup companies, a lot of times, you know, for them, they get to the point where they can't get investors or they don't have enough cash flow. Like they have these, like they're truly issues in the business. It's not like they're all in their head. And that's the other thing. I think a lot of people think, oh, you're just making things up. No, like trough of sorrow is based on like things that aren't great going on in your business. It's not usually just like, oh, I'm feeling down. It's like, oh yeah, I got hit by a Google update. I have zero traffic. Zero traffic means zero money, right? Or, you know, we don't have any customers. Well, why don't you have any customers? And then you have the opportunity to figure it out.
Come to think of it, I had the trough of sorrow of my job too. I mean, it was miserable for 12 years after the downturn, actually.
12 years?
But anyway, because people were worried about getting laid off. But anyway, that's a separate story. Let's talk about the blog.
Yes.
And I'm curious what your trough of sorrow was. For the blog, I didn't get any love at all that first year. And it's sad when your family members, I always name my mom, but it was more than my mom, actually. Yeah. You know, his friends and whatnot, they were like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
And I was writing, there was one point I was writing every single day, five days a week, I should say.
Yeah.
And not getting any traffic.
I don't think I had as much of a, I've had troughs of sorrow with the blog closer to now than I have early on. I actually didn't experience that. And I think in a way that I wish I would have had a little bit more of a struggle when I first got started. But I definitely felt it in the e-commerce business whenever we had issues with Amazon. And, you know, because things were going along, we were excited, we had new products, it was fun. And then we had some Amazon issues and they just felt insurmountable. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think you remember this, you know, it was like, I wasn't ready to totally quit, but I was questioning like, do I need this business? Probably not. Like I can survive on my other businesses and, you know, do I need this headache? Do I need to be trying to deal with all this? And at the end of the day, I realized that the benefits outweighed the cost, but you know, there was definitely a period where I was like, you know what? I can walk away from this. I don't need this headache. But I'm glad I didn't.
You know, it's funny. We always operate in opposites. I think, like in your case, you always start out great. Like your e-com business started out awesome.
Yes.
Right.
I'm a good starter.
You're a great starter. I am like the worst starter ever, I think, because nothing ever works out for me when I start, and then it just gets better, kind of randomly, like a year later or 2 years later.
Yeah. So here's some of the things that I think are beneficial to not. I think being successful right away is not necessarily a good thing. I mean,
it's not.
Okay. I knew. Yeah, I was waiting for that. It is a good. Obviously, you want to be successful right away. And we know several people who've hit a home run right out of the park, basically, with their websites and things like that. But I would definitely say that's not common and that's not the norm. And here's why I think it's actually better to not have that happen to you is that sometimes you get lucky on something that's not necessarily going to be a foundation of your business. So maybe, you know, like a good example is like I had that Borax Ant Killer post, right? That got me so much traffic for so long, but really that didn't really help my website a ton outside of, you know, ad revenue because it wasn't truly like what I write about. I just, mm-hmm. you know, I got lucky with that, but it didn't help me I couldn't build on that. So I think when you have issues in the beginning, it allows you to sort of test your ideas because maybe you wrote something and it didn't work. And so you pivot. Like when you first started writing on My Wife Quit Her Job, you weren't writing necessarily about e-commerce. You were writing about like investing, I think. And
yes. And kids and money, which was a popular topic actually at the time.
Yeah. But it didn't resonate with your audience. And so you pivoted and were able to create something, I think, way more successful than you would have ever been able to create writing about kids and money.
That's debatable. I didn't follow through, though, right? that's a problem. We'll never know because I didn't follow through with that.
Yeah.
That's an interesting perspective, I guess. We have a mutual friend who made a lot of videos on stimulus checks and blew up.
Yeah.
But then now that the stimulus checks are over, hopefully, all that audience who is interested in that aren't interested in his main stuff, which is investing.
Right.
So I guess if you think about it that way, I don't know. I feel like my whole life has been a trough, right? I mean, just growing up.
Because you're Asian.
I mean, I was studying at an early age. I mean, I wasn't going out hanging out with friends a lot, when I was really young.
Yeah.
Because I was studying. So I guess I'm used to it.
Yeah. Well, I'm a middle class white child, so I had no experience with the trough of sorrow. No.
But okay, let's talk about how to overcome it though.
So
for me, it's just a way of life. So
yeah. So you're
it's harder.
Yes,
for me to
I know. You're gonna be like, the way you overcome this is just do it. Okay, so I actually have some book suggestions and some I guess it's science. I don't know. I hate to throw that word around you because you'll shoot me down. But have you read the book Grit by Angela Duckworth?
I have not.
Okay.
Is it good?
It's not the best book I've ever read. It's definitely not the best book I've ever written. But so basically, she studied what are the key components of somebody that allows them to be successful. So she started off studying cadets at West Point. And if you're familiar with like the military academies, you know, it's pretty grueling in general, but then like during certain times of year, they go through like a very grueling challenge. It's like 3 or 4 days. They don't let them sleep. They don't let them eat. You know, they try to, and they put them through all sorts of like mental and physical exercises that are super strenuous on you, like, you know, like not just mentally, physically, everything. They sleep deprive you, kind of like the SEAL training, right? And so
we're like, yeah, of course. Yeah, just like we both, when I went through that.
Yeah, we've both done. Yeah. But most people are familiar with like SEALs or Green Berets or things like that and the amount of training that they have to go through. But what she found was when, and you know, most of the people that are, everybody who's in West Point is in academic, like they're stellar, right? You don't get into West Point or the Naval Academy or any place like that based on anything but your merit. So it's very competitive because it's a free education. So, you know, everybody in West Point would be considered a successful student, right? A successful person. They've, you know, probably graduated close to top of their class, something like that. They're a stellar athlete, something like that. Well, what she found was the people that successfully completed the, you know, hell week or whatever they call it at West Point had nothing to do with SAT scores, GPAs, their performance in class, nothing. It had everything to do with basically how much grit they had. So basically a measure of your stick-to-itiveness or perseverance. So it had literally nothing to do with your innate talent or intellect.
That's definitely true in business, for sure.
Yeah. And she...
You just have to stick around long enough for luck to happen.
Yeah. So she took this same, like... And she did, like, a test to basically to measure someone's grit. And so she gave it to West Point. She gave it to the Green Berets. She gave it to a bunch of Ivy League students. She gave it to the Spelling Bee champions. And every single time, without fail, grit was the best indicator of their success.
I'm just curious how she quantified all that stuff, but
I mean,
I agree with her, I don't have any. Okay.
I mean, we could do a whole podcast on the science behind that, but basically, you know, it's questions that measure your basically ability to persevere versus your raw intellect or ability.
All right. So a better way to talk about this is how do you improve that aspect then?
How do you improve your grit?
Yeah. Right? I mean, that's one thing to say that. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to help anyone.
So I think people are innately gritty. I think definitely your personality lends itself to that way. But I think you can train yourself to be that way. And so I'll use myself as an example. I actually did not grow up middle class. I grew up without a lot of money. And so as a kid, you know, if I wanted something, I had to figure out a way to get the money to buy it. So when I was 5 or 6, I bought my own swing set out of money that I saved up from like doing little chores and allowance and, you know, birthday money. When I was like 7 or 8, I saved up and bought a bicycle. Like my whole life, when I wanted to go to camp when I was in middle school, my parents just didn't have the money for the camp. So my best friend and I went to like the local 7-Eleven or Circle K and bought little individual snack packs and then went door to door and sold them to make, we like doubled the, you know, whatever the retail price was, we doubled it and sold them door to door. I think we sold pumpkins, we sold poinsettias. Like my whole life, whenever I encountered like a roadblock, I just was like, okay, let me do the next thing too. So, and I don't think I was taught that. Like, I think that was just part of my personality. But there's a lot of people that don't, that's not their first response. I have a couple kids who their first response is, well, I guess I won't do it then. Right.
Yes. My kids are like that sometimes too. Yeah.
So I think that there's some people that just innately have that in their personality, but I think you can teach it. And the first thing that I think, especially if you're in the context of if you're in the trough of sorrow, I think my first number one tip is to stop hustling. You might know something.
Interesting.
You might know something about that.
Okay. Well, what's your definition of hustling?
Just, okay, I'm going to work harder. I'm going to work more. I'm going to, you know, I'm working 9 to 5. I'm going to work 9 to 9. I'm going to work every weekend. I'm just going to be totally obsessive about what I'm doing.
Okay, I would agree with that because I went through the same thing when I wrote 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. I couldn't keep that up. So I dropped it down to something that I could easily maintain without thinking about it.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
So I think it leads, so when you take that approach, you're going to burn out. You're so involved in it, you can't take a step back and actually evaluate. When you're writing 5 days a week on a site and you're not seeing improvements, you're not giving yourself any time to see what you can do to actually make the improvements because you're so busy trying to churn out. I mean, churning out 5 pieces of content a week is really hard. It takes a lot of time.
Yes.
And when you're not writing the content, you're thinking about the content. What content should I write and what do I need to do? And so you never take that time to step back and say, okay, what's working and what's not working, because you're always working.
Yeah. I guess I don't call that not hustling. I call that reprioritizing.
But haven't you...
For me, at least.
But haven't you met people whose, like, solution to every problem is just work more?
Yes. And it just depends on the person. Sometimes that works if they can keep it up for a long period of time until they hit something that works, right? That's just not the way I operate. But, yeah, and I agree with you. Like, if you're going to burn yourself out, if you're close to burnout already, this is, like, the main way to get yourself to quit.
Yeah. Well, I think, and if you're in the trough of sorrow, you're probably ready to quit anyway.
Like, right.
Those are the feelings you're having. So the next one that I'm going to say that I think is really important, and I don't necessarily agree with myself on this every time, but I think one of the best strategies that you can have to come out of the trough of sorrow quickly is to have a financial cushion.
Interesting. Okay. I've never been in a situation where I didn't have a financial cushion, actually.
Exactly. So, for example, you didn't quit your full-time job until both of your other businesses were well out-earning your day job.
Right. That's correct.
I think about our friend JD, and, you know, I think I might not be exactly right on this, but I think he didn't leave the box business, you know, his family business, until his blog was making more in a month than he was making in a year at his day job.
So, but he didn't quit though. So what?
He did quit his job.
No, but after.
No, he did quit after he was making consistently every month what his day job made in a year. He quit the day job.
Well, yeah, no, I understand that, but he didn't quit without making that money, right?
Right. So here's why I think it's important. Another person I think about is like Marie Forleo, who taught she's like a coach, right? A life coach, I guess, is the best business coach. You know, when she was starting that business, she still taught like dance classes and exercise classes. Like I think she bartended, she says in her book. So a lot of people that you and I know or know of that are very successful today didn't quit their income generating job until their new venture could support them easily.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I thought you were saying the opposite.
No,
okay,
no.
So you want a cushion.
Yes.
Right. So you want a cushion. Right. Yes, I completely agree with that. But on the flip side, there needs to be some stress,
yes.
I think.
See, that's the only rub, right? But here's why I think having a cushion matters. Because I think when you have a cushion, it gives you the opportunity to take some risks that you might not necessarily. Because when your job, like if you're trying to create a website and build content to generate income, you know, at some point you start making decisions solely based on money and panic.
Yes.
Right? Whereas let's just think about if you were, you know, let's just say my wife quit her job, wasn't making the amount of money that it is today, and you wanted to start a YouTube channel. Well, you were willing to start that YouTube channel and grow it slowly, write the content that you wanted to write, test, change things up. But if you were like, hey, I need to make $4,000 a month on YouTube or I don't eat, you probably would have taken a very different tactic on YouTube and maybe not seen the level. I think you've seen a lot of success on YouTube. You might not have seen that success because you were making decisions completely based on fear of not being able to pay for the rent.
That's a tough example,
yes.
Actually, because I knew that ahead of time that it would probably take a couple of years.
Yeah.
Right. So as long as you kind of know in your mind that it's going to take a certain time frame, that makes things easier. Whereas if I was expecting for it to take off in like 6 months, that wouldn't have been realistic.
Yeah. Well, I also think too, when you have a cushion, you can make logical decisions versus fear-based decisions.
Right. No, I mean, I completely agree with you on all counts. I actually don't have the guts to quit everything and just jump right into something. It's just not my personality.
Now, all that to say, I do think on occasion, I mean, there are people that like, I had to make this work because I had to make it work, right? That's not ideal. And I think if you're in the trough of sorrow right now in your business and this is your only income, it might alleviate some of your stress if you found another source of income through a job, like a 9-to-5. Or not even a 9-to-5, go work as a bartender or, you know, something just to get some money in the bank.
I would agree with that. Like, if I was stressed out like that, I probably wouldn't be able to sleep, and my productivity would be lower too, actually.
Right, because everything is just, it's consuming you, and so you're not able to make, I think, the best decisions about your business.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. So let me just make it clear, you're advising people get a job along with their business, or?
I don't think you should quit your job until your business is making enough money to support you or pay whatever that financial point is for you. I mean, some people live on almost nothing, right? So they don't need to be making a ton of money to survive. But I wouldn't quit the job that's paying those bills until you can pay those bills.
Sure. I think what I would do if I were in that situation is I would save up like a year's worth. I mean, it's hard to do, but I would save up a year's worth of minimalist eating. Like, we're talking eating ramen and whatnot every day, whatever you can to just afford that for a year, that gives yourself runway.
Yeah. Yeah.
To do this. Of course, this is difficult if you have a family though. So I guess if you're single, you can absolutely do this easily.
Give yourself, your whole family's eating ramen for a year.
I know. Exactly.
Hope y'all like it. So, okay. This next one, I think you're going to love. Because this is your quote. Make forward progress if you're in the trough of sorrow. And this is actually really hard to do if you are feeling hopeless or depressed. Yeah, and I have not experienced this, and I don't think you have either. But there, I know that this is true, that for some people, it is hard to get out of bed. It is hard to get out of bed and just get dressed because they have such feelings of despair. And these are like normal everyday people that you and I know. This isn't like, oh, this is someone who just struggles with mental health all the time. This is like a normal thing for people to go through. And it's temporary. It doesn't last forever. But there's just this feeling that nothing's ever going to change. Nothing's ever going to get better. And it's hard just to do one thing.
Yeah, I've actually mixed feelings about this. Not the make forward progress part.
Yeah.
But in terms of just staying the course.
Yeah.
What I like to do is I like to talk to people who are successful just to make sure that my course is the correct course. And if it is the correct course that they followed, then maybe it makes sense for me to stick with it. But if I've been doing something for many years and it's not going anywhere, that means you probably need to change things up a little bit.
Oh, I totally agree with that. But what I'm saying is when you're feeling hopeless, just get one thing done each day, because there are days when you're not going to be able, you're not going to want to even do one thing, and not one thing like get out of bed, like do one thing for your business, whether it's get on the phone call with somebody and talk about, hey, this is what my business is doing right now. I need some advice. Or maybe it's you're going to watch a webinar, or you're going to read a book, or you're going to have a meeting with your focus group, whatever that is, or you're going to write a piece of content. You're going to, could be a variety of things, but do one thing every single day that's going to move your business forward.
Yeah. I mean, I do that for mental reasons.
Yeah.
I feel accomplished if I just finish something.
So, and actually, have you read, this is my another next book recommendation. Have you read The One Thing?
I've read the book summary because I'm lazy.
Do
you recommend reading that one straight through, actually? Because the gist is pretty straightforward.
So here's what's funny is I read, oh my gosh, how much of that book did I read? Maybe, and you know, like I go through, like I do all my reading in chunks. Like I'll take a couple weeks in the summer and read like 20 books, and then I won't read, you know, I'll read like one book over 6 months, and then I'll do the same thing again. So I was, when I was in my like read 20 books in 2 weeks phase, our friend Deacon Hayes recommended that. He was just all about that book. And so I picked it up. I started reading it. I'm like, no, duh. Like, of course, do one thing every day. Like, it was kind of like, okay, this isn't whatever. I already knew this. But I will say, like, I read it, part of it, and then I was talking to Deacon again, and he said a couple things about the book, and I picked it back up, and I read it with a different I read it without my cynical perspective the second time. And I definitely think if you are struggling with this, like if you're struggling with finding one thing, making, because I know, like for me, when my personal life is a little bit chaotic, I have trouble figuring out what to do in business. So I'll just like get up in the morning and go sit at my computer, and I'm just like, I don't know what to do today. Like, I know that I have a million things to do, but I don't know which one I should do. So I end up doing something that's completely useless, like checking email. because I'm like, oh, well, if at least I check email, I feel productive, right? But like checking email does not make me money. Rarely does it make me money. Mm-hmm. So I think when I read that book with a little bit of a different perspective of basically how to figure out what the one thing should be, how to use it to move your business forward, that sort of thing, I did find the book to be a good read. But if you have Steve's personality, don't read it. That's
my what personality aspect is that?
I don't know. Whatever your personality is. I don't know.
I mean, I think I have the opposite problem. You know me. I like to see my calendar completely clear.
Yes.
Like I can't even take on something new.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to sacrifice that. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So I do recommend the book. Maybe just read the summary.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think if you.
Well, no, I was just asking you. I was just curious if there's anything that I missed by just reading the summary.
For you, probably not. I do think, though, it's a good book to read if you are in this place in your business, just feeling very hopeless. I think it'll help give you direction.
Okay.
So.
What else you got on your list?
Okay, this is a big one. Find your cheerleaders. This is actually really important. You need to find people that are going to, and not, this is where it gets a little bit tricky. You don't want to find people that are just going to sugarcoat everything to you and tell you you're amazing if you're making really bad choices. But you need to find people that can basically come alongside you and say things like, hey, I was here too 2 years ago, and this is what I did, right? Or, listen, I get it. And you just want to find people that can be on your side, because a lot of times when you feel hopeless and down, especially with your business, you feel like a failure and you feel like nobody likes you, nobody appreciates, especially if you're in a content business, right? Failure means no one thinks you're interesting because no one's reading your stuff, right? So it's not like, oh, I started a business selling watches and they didn't sell, so no one likes watches, right? It's not personal. When you write a content site and people don't read it, it gets very personal very quickly. So I think you need people in your corner that just make you realize that, one, your worth is not necessarily totally wrapped into what you're writing about or your content or your brand. And then two, that will just listen to you and be a friend, basically.
Or you just need a coach.
That's different, though. A coach is like, I mean, I do think if you're in that trough of sorrow, hiring a coach isn't a bad idea.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about my tennis game right now. I was actually in a trough of sorrow before I...
Yes, I was actually... I wanted to... So I'm doing an office hours on this same topic, and I wanted to find a picture of you playing tennis. I went on your Facebook page. There are no pictures of you playing tennis.
Oh, yeah. Well, because I'm playing. I'm not filming, right? I'm playing.
Whatever. Come on. Do it for the gram.
So, yeah, because my game has not improved. And I'd been playing during the entire pandemic I played.
Yeah.
Like once a week, once or twice a week, religiously, and I wasn't getting any better. And it was once I got a coach, things moved on quickly, even though my coach just recently beat me with his left hand, but that's a different story for another time.
No, let's unpack that, Steve. How did you feel when you got beat by your right-handed coach using his left hand?
He was just trying to show me that power isn't everything, because I like power.
Yes.
And it's true. He couldn't hit any power with his left hand. And you beat me. Anyway, where was I going with this?
You were in the trough of sorrow. You weren't improving.
Yes, I was in the trough of sorrow because I wasn't getting any better. And sometimes you just need someone to point out certain things that kind of change the way you think about something.
Yeah, so a good example of this is our friend Kim Sorgis, who's been on Office Hours a couple times and has been to our events. And so she was a blogger back in the day, and she kind of hit the trough of sorrow. Like she started out, she got that nice little traffic bump. She was doing well, and then it kind of just stagnated, and she wasn't making enough money for her to support her family. And she was in that position where she actually like really did need the money. She was a single mom, four little kids. And she decided to hire Leslie Samuel as a coach. And he's a good friend of ours. And he basically gave her a different perspective on her business and challenge her on a lot of different things, and basically got her on the path to where she is today, which is a seven-figure business owner.
I'm curious how he did it. What did he say?
I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't her coach.
All right. No, I mean, in a nutshell. Okay. You've never talked to Kim about this?
Not specifics. I know one of the things that she was basically, I think, I thought this too. She was going in the wrong direction of what she thought she needed to create and the content that she was making. And Leslie said, you need to survey your audience, which we're like, oh, of course you need to survey your audience, right? But sometimes when you're in that trough of sorrow, something that basic does not occur to you. And he basically helped her craft a survey. I know this was a big component of it. Helped her craft a survey. And she realized that what she was creating was basically the opposite of what her audience wanted. And she started creating what they wanted. And, whoa, they started buying. Crazy.
Interesting. Okay.
So he did a lot of other things, too. But that was one of the big ones.
I mean, he's pretty motivational, yes, too, like yes. when you talk. And he's always happy, high energy.
Yes. If you want to hire, I mean, I don't necessarily think hiring a coach is a bad thing at all. I think it can be a very good thing for your business. But you have to hire the right coach. It's okay to think, it's okay to hire one and fire them if they're not right for you.
Right.
Okay. My next one, and this is one that I know you're going to love.
Are you being sarcastic?
Of course I am.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So at first I said educate yourself, but I changed that to empower yourself, which I know is a word that you just love.
But okay, define that for me first before you go on.
So I think, and I just talked about this, especially when your business is personal, when it fails, it feels like a very big personal failure. And I think sometimes you just need a lot of input in your life, not necessarily from people, just inputs that will make you realize that you are a really amazing, awesome person that has something valuable to share. And you just need that like drilled in your head over and over and over again in a variety of different ways.
Does this have to do with having cheerleaders or is this something different?
It's different because cheerleaders are people that you basically have a dialogue with, right? I think empowering or even educating yourself is reading, listening to podcasts, you know, joining focus groups, doing as much as you can to get yourself out there and not sort of withdrawing and sitting in your own sorrow.
I mean, you know that I have this complex with the friends that I have, right? That have had these nine-figure exits, right? And they're like 100 millionaires or whatever.
Yeah.
I got this complex because I interact with them and I see them at least once a year, once or twice a year.
Yeah.
But so what do you do to empower yourself? Like, teach me.
So I have a couple examples of this. One of my favorite podcasts that I listen to when I'm in a slump is the Shailene Show. You know Shailene Johnson. You had her on your podcast.
Oh, yeah. I listen to her show just because she's hilarious.
She's hilarious. And some of her podcasts are not necessarily empowering. They're about, like, you know, how to exercise. Not that I think you shouldn't exercise. I do. But she has a lot of podcasts basically about getting over the hump and getting through stuff like this. And she is a very upbeat, positive person. And it's hard not to listen to her and just feel like I can do anything because that's her person. Like, she just sort of infuses that in you. And I'm sure you're like, oh, my God, this is so woo woo. But
I like her. Her style is I mean, I've tried to like learn from her style, actually.
Yeah. And I feel like it's hard to watch her stories or listen to her podcast, you know, follow her on social media and not be motivated to try something new. Like, you can't interact with her content and not feel a little bit better about yourself. Like, there's some people that I listen to that after I listen to them, I'm like, well, I'm a loser. You know, look how good they're doing. And then they're not that they're doing that on purpose, but that's never how she comes across. You always listen to her and feel like I can do anything, you know? And I think, you know, and it might not be Shailene for somebody else, right? That's someone that resonates with me. I know other people that she resonates with as well. It could be someone else that you listen to on a podcast or something like that. But I think that's actually really, really helpful.
You know why she works for people? I've discovered it's because she talks about like her feelings at the time.
Yeah.
And she's not a rock.
No.
And, you know, she has all these feelings, but then she talks about how she overcame them. And so I guess what you're suggesting here to empower yourself maybe is to talk to somebody who's gone through it and understand that they're going through the same thing that you are. Is that?
I don't necessarily think you need to talk to them. I think you can listen. I think it can be one-sided.
Or you can just listen?
I think if you can talk to somebody, that's great. The other book that I want to recommend that was actually, I would say, probably the most, there's two books that I read that are, I would say, life-changing. This is one of them. And it's called The Most Powerful Woman in the Room Is You. By Lydia Fenette. She's an auctioneer for, what's the big auction house in New York? Christie's?
Oh, Sotheby's?
Sotheby's. I don't know. One of those, right?
Okay.
And obviously it says the most powerful woman in the room, but anyone can read this. Actually, I think maybe it was Mike Barnhill read it and said it was amazing. One of our guy friends read it and said it was like life-changing too. So even though it's definitely a female book written by a female, I don't think I don't think that's a reason not to read it if you're a guy and you struggle with this. But basically, she talks about her story of she was the first female auctioneer. And it was a big deal that she, you know, she does all their charity auctions. So everything that she does is for to raise money for different charities. And the amount of pressure that she felt when she got started was to be like all the other auctioneers, right? And to follow the same path because, you know, this is like prestigious and people, everyone in that room has a ton of money. And you're asking people for a ton of money. I mean, we're not auctioning off $15 things here. We're in the thousands and thousands of dollars. And what she discovered through this whole process of her getting this job was basically like the best weapon she ever had was to be herself. And it talks about her journey of like not trying to copy and be like all the other auctioneers. She had to find her own voice and be her own personality and do what she did best. And that's how she found her voice. So it's not like you're more powerful than anyone else in the room. It's basically the whole point of the book is when you are yourself, you have a level of power that is hard to like match.
That term gets thrown around a lot. I have my own personal story that's like that. Okay. It's not about being yourself really, but when I was an engineer and I first started out, and I think I might have told you this story, we were designing processors and I was kind of new to this. And so I always tried to like copy like my mentor's code, not copy, but you know, follow the same style and whatnot. And then one day I remember I was in a meeting and chatting with a bunch of people and it was like, everyone was like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just putting stuff down. There's no structure to this. You know, I mean, everyone has their own style is basically what they said. No one knows what they're doing. There's no right or wrong answer. And I remember coming out of the meeting going, huh, okay, well, I'm just going to do whatever the hell I want then.
Yeah.
Right? And then it worked. I mean, I have my own style. You just got to figure out what your own style is and stick with it. So like what works for us might not work for someone else. And so maybe that's what she means.
Yeah, in a very, very concise nutshell, yes. But I highly recommend reading this book. It's one of the best books I've ever read.
I just summarized it though.
Okay, you're
you're right. Read the book.
But here's the other thing to think about is that most people, human nature is to conform and be like everybody else because you don't want to stick out, be different, get attention called to you. Now there are people in this world that don't believe in that and they're, you know, they march to their own drum and good for them. But for most of us, that's not a normal thing. So I highly recommend if you find yourself struggling to be yourself, I would recommend reading the book. Okay. Last couple ones that I want to get through.
I just want to also say that that's like a confidence thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Being yourself is a confidence thing.
Yeah. But most people don't have a lot of confidence. That's the thing.
Right. And to build confidence, it's almost like you need some quick wins.
Yes.
Right. I mean, saying all this stuff is hard. I didn't gain any confidence really until... There's two moments in my life where I gained confidence. One was at that nerd camp.
The nerd camp where you told the joke.
The jokes. And then the second boost of confidence was actually that e-commerce store really gave me a lot of confidence. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, you're going to agree with this one. This is I should have put you on this slide for the office hours. The next one is give your brain a break, and I think the best way to do that is to exercise.
Yes, 100% agree with that.
Yeah. Get some kind of hobby that gets you moving. I don't care if you're doing jazzercise, steps, walkercise, whatever it is. Like, you don't have to go out there and run a triathlon or participate in a triathlon. But you have to get moving, I think, to help your brain work at its optimal level.
I do my best work when I'm physically exhausted.
Interesting.
Maybe it's because I can't get out of my chair. You know how I am after I play Ultimate. I can't move. I literally can't move. So if I sit down in my chair, I'm not leaving it for hours. And my mind is like perfectly calm.
Yeah.
It's almost like my heart is beating at half the rate.
Yeah.
And then I get into a zone.
Yeah. And I mean, you and I both recommend like physical exercise to do this. But I think if that's just like absolutely you're never going to do that or it's not something that you're able to do, even like, okay, well, maybe you're going to take up knitting or you're going to do some sort of activity that you do on a very regular basis that allows you to step away from everything related to your work.
Interesting, knitting.
I mean, that was just the first thing that came to my head. Maybe you like to garden. Maybe you want to go work outside and like work in.
Yeah, something physical, right? Is what you're getting at.
I mean, I think something physical, but there are definitely people who are just not going to be able to do that due to physical limitations or health issues. And so, you know, anything that just allows you to stop working and do something completely different that's not sitting in front of the TV or getting on your phone or something like that.
You know what works really well also, and I don't consider this exercise, is Wim Hof, like the breathing exercises. Yeah. My goodness. You know, I actually haven't done that in a long time because I've forgotten about it until this conversation.
I had to do it the other day because I was having like a little panic attack. So.
Yeah. But you end up so calm.
Yes.
The only problem is I end up falling asleep for like 20 minutes. But then when I'm done with that, like I have a clear mind. I can get a lot of stuff done. Oh, speaking of which, you know, the flotation tank is another thing that makes me feel really good after I do it.
Yeah.
It's just a little expensive for me to do it regularly. That's the problem.
Yeah. So I think that the point of this is like finding something that you can do on almost a daily basis, right? 5 days a week.
Right.
So that's why I think it needs to be something like exercise or a hobby that's not related to your job or any, like your hobby can't be watching television. Like, it's got to be something different. Okay. I got two more and then I know we're like close on time. This one is one I think you would agree with too, is set little rewards for yourself to motivate you to keep going. And the example that I think of with this one is whenever we started Seller Summit, we decided to offer that virtual pass, which, you know, it's like, meh, it's, I mean, the virtual pass is great if you can't attend Seller Summit for sure. Right. But for you and I, like, we feel like the optimum conference experience is to be there in person. So neither of us, I don't think, do a great job of selling the virtual pass because we really want to meet people in person. But, I mean, there's definitely people that can't travel or maybe it's their kid's graduation. I mean, we always have that every year. It's someone's graduation or chorus concert or whatever, and they don't want to miss it. And I totally understand that. So do you remember, like, I think it was the second year we decided to reward ourselves and we said whatever we make on the virtual passes, we'll go to the NBA game. That was like
I don't remember that. I thought that was just... regardless of how many virtual passes we
sold. No, but we kind of set that up in our, like, we didn't actually do that, but like we used that as a little bit of a motivator to sort of push the virtual passes a little bit harder. Because we were like, hey, you know, we only want to spend, you know, $500 on tickets, but what if we take some of that virtual pass money and spend it on tickets? Then we can get better seats, right? So it was like, but that was a motive. Like for me, that was a motivator. I'm like, well, if that means I get to sit behind LeBron, then I'm doing it, right? Like I'll go to the street corner and sell them. and obviously that's an extreme example, but it could be something like, hey, if I achieve this by the end of the week, I'm going to allow myself to, you know, go to my favorite restaurant or, you know, to do something that you want to do, go get a massage, whatever it is.
I like to do things pleasant while I'm doing like the hard work too.
Yeah.
Like whether it be like food, like, you know, usually after we do one of our workshops.
Yeah.
Like I immediately have my favorite food kind of for dinner right after. Or I'll listen to like really good music when I'm writing.
Yeah.
And I only listen to that music when I'm writing.
Yeah.
Like I save it for that. So I associate it with it.
Yeah. And I'll do the same thing. Like, okay, when I finish this, I'm going to allow myself to like get up and do this one thing that I wanted to really check out, or I'm going to give myself 20 minutes to browse on Rent the Runway or something. You know, I'll like give myself little time. I usually do it in time benefits. Like, okay, if I like get all this done by this time, then I'm going to give myself X amount of time to shop on Pottery Barn, whatever. I'm not going to buy anything. I'm just going to browse, but feels good.
I mean, I think the key point in all this is I think everyone goes through the trough of sorrow.
Yeah.
And just by understanding that in itself should help get you through it, knowing that everyone goes through it. It's just like a phase. It's like going through your teenage years, because my daughter's a teenager right now. It's just something you got to go through.
And the good news is you'll come out of it a better person.
Exactly. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.